Well, here I am at the border, Vermont and Massachusetts, standing in front of this familiar sign, which says, "Welcome to Vermont."
I'm Matt Podolsky, and in 2022, I attempted a thru-hike of the Appalachian Trail with my mom. But when I reached the Vermont border, my mom wasn't with me. She had been forced off trail by injury a few weeks previous. The Vermont border marks the start of the Long Trail. This is a special spot for my mom and I. It's where we began our first long hike together just after we lost my dad to cancer. So reaching this point without her gave me some mixed emotions.
The Long Trail, maintained by the Green Mountain Club, follows the Green Mountain Range for 273 miles north to Canada. The AT follows the Long Trail for 105 miles.
So for the next 105 miles, I would be following the path of both the Appalachian Trail and the Long Trail. The Long Trail actually predates the Appalachian Trail. Construction on this hiking path began in 1912, 9 years before Benton McKay wrote his famous article introducing the concept of the AT. In fact, the Long Trail served as the inspiration for the creation of the AT. This would be my third time hiking this 100-mile stretch where the AT and the Long Trail overlap. I did it in 2003 on my first long hike when I was in college, and I did it again with my mom in 2013. But this time was different. This time, I was hiking alone. At least, I thought I was alone.
Hey there.
I think I'm going to do the Long Trail for a little bit.
Well,
I'm done with the AT.
For the next 105 miles, you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Just after I reached the border, a fellow thru-hiker approached and struck up a conversation.
I actually did the Long Trail 9 years ago, so.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So, it's a familiar sign for me.
Where are you from?
Boston area originally, but I live out in Idaho.
Yeah.
You want a picture?
No. I'm too sweaty for a picture, I think. All right, Birdman.
All right, man. See you up there.
I'll see you on the Long Trail.
Yeah.
As I crossed the border into Vermont, I was officially entering northern New England, by far the most rugged and difficult stretch of the Appalachian Trail.
There's about eight miles or so of the Appalachian Trail that is up above treeline along that ridge.
And although I was no longer hiking with my mom, I was starting to realize that I wasn't truly alone.
I thought I'd be able to tell, like, which peak is which, but
they're all just mountains I gotta climb.
This is Common Land, a show about the Appalachian Trail. In this episode, we explore how friendship and community in the outdoors can make wild places feel like home.
Basically every shelter I've come to over the last 90, 95 miles while I've been on the Long Trail, as I've approached it, memories have come flooding back to me.
The flood of memories from my trip on the Long Trail with my mom made hiking this section bittersweet. I was amazed by how much I remembered from 9 years ago, but frustrated that my mom couldn't be there to share those memories with me. But I was hiking fast, 20 plus miles a day, so I wasn't on the Long Trail for very long.
The Long Trail continues north through Vermont towards the Canadian border, and the Appalachian Trail branches to the east towards Hanover, New Hampshire, and the White Mountains.
The White Mountains are infamous amongst thru-hikers. The climbs are incredibly steep, and the views are spectacular.
I'm here in New Hampshire, climbing up Cube Mountain, and partway up, and just got a fantastic view. I see the distant ridgelines of the Whites, and then just these puffy white clouds down below, covering the valleys.
As I got closer to New Hampshire's White Mountains, I was also getting closer to the origin point of modern mountain climbing.
the granddaddy of all trails is the Crawford Path, which was built in 1819.
Becky Fullerton is the archivist for the Appalachian Mountain Club, or the AMC, as most people call it. And the Crawford Path is kind of a legend among trails.
It went from Ethan Allen Crawford's house, which was happened to be in a tavern and an inn as well, to the summit of Mount Washington.
Long before any modern hiking trails were established in southern Appalachia or anywhere else in the United States, people began climbing to the top of Mount Washington, the tallest peak in New Hampshire's White Mountains. The Crawford Path, which overlaps the Appalachian Trail for several miles, is the oldest continuously maintained hiking trail in the U.S.
You know, that was the main tourist route to really get off the beaten path at that time.
During the mid-1800s, enthusiasts cut more trails to the tops of the area's most prominent peaks, but these early paths were isolated from one another. Only one network of interconnected hiking trails was established before the outbreak of the Civil War in New Hampshire's Waterville Valley.
My great-grandfather in the 1860s and 70s built trails in the valley that's just across the mountains from where I am now, Waterville Valley.
That's Nat Scrimshaw, the chair of the World Trails Network's Hub for the Americas.
It's called the Waterville Valley Athletic and Improvement Association. That's generally considered to be the first trail system in the country, making this distinction of not just having isolated trails here and there, but having a trail network that emerged from a valley with an inn and people would come to specifically go hiking.
From there, similar networks of hiking trails began to spread across the Northeast like spider webs. This is where the Appalachian Mountain Club comes in. The club was founded in 1876 by an MIT physics professor, and at first it was just a group of friends who liked to go out hiking. But as more early hiking enthusiasts joined, volunteers started going out into the mountains to cut new trails.
Yeah, this trails committee that AMC forms, and they go on what they call trail sprees.
Again, that's Becky Fullerton, the archivist for the Appalachian Mountain Club.
They go in like the whole summer long. They all, you know, they take off their summer vacation as a doctor or a lawyer or a professor. And they go for like 4 to 6 weeks at a time. And they build these trails all in one go. They lay them all out. They, you know, blaze them. They measure them. They build shelters. And they go all over the place. And it's really just where anybody can imagine they would want to go with a trail. Suddenly you see them building that trail.
I think they also saw it as fun, you know, like fun to build trails.
That's Laura Waterman, a longtime hiker and mountaineer who co-authored Forest and Crag, which was first published in 1989 and remains one of the most comprehensive records of mountain climbing and trail building in the Northeast.
They were thrilled by how hard it was. I mean, the terrain itself is so thickly forested. You know, it took tremendous guts and perseverance to just crawl your way through there. They had their axes, their wool clothing. They would have had a compass. Don't you wish you could have been along? I mean, it was a burst of trail building over maybe 40 years or less. Not a lot was built in the way of trails after that.
Spider webs of hiking trails were expanding across northern New England throughout the late 1800s and early 1900s. By the time Benton McKay had laid out his vision for the Appalachian Trail in 1921, there was already an extensive network of hiking trails in New Hampshire, and more than 200 miles of Vermont's Long Trail had already been built. Establishing the Appalachian Trail in this region was a matter of choosing a route along existing trails.
Protecting my microphone. The enemy of good sound is wind.
Yeah.
Top of Mount Musilaki with Chop Chop here. Some other folks about to join us. Mount Mussolacci, 4,802 feet. Super windy up here. But amazing, amazing views in every direction.
For northbound thru-hikers on the Appalachian Trail, Mount Mussolacci, or Mussolac, as some pronounce it, marks one's entry into the White Mountains. It's also the first peak on the AT that's above the tree line. In the Northeast, trees generally can't grow above 4,000 feet elevation. After hiking over 1,000 miles through dense forests, reaching these open expanses is a pretty big change. And this wasn't the only change that I was experiencing at this stage of my hike. Just the previous week, I had joined a tramley.
It's so less windy down here.
I know, right? It's like you just step down 10 feet and it's actually kind of pleasant.
Tramley is thru-hiker slang for trail family. A tramley forms when a group of hikers decide to stick together for a while.
This is the first time above tree line.
Yeah. Well, what about Big Bald?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like, there's a lot of peaks in the south where there's no trees, but that's all because of grazing.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. I think this is the first time where, like the weather conditions make it so that trees can't grow.
Got it.
Yeah.
By the time I climbed to the summit of Mussolacci, Chop Chop and I had formed a tramley with three other hikers. We'll hear from each member of my new tramley after a short break. Hey there, adventurers. Are you ready to hit the trail this season? If so, check out Big Agnes, the mother of comfort. Whether you're backpacking, car camping, or sleeping under the stars in your backyard, Big Agnes gear is built for comfort without compromise. Their award-winning sleeping bags, pads, and tents are lightweight, durable, and feel like home, no matter where you roam. Say goodbye to cold, stiff nights, and hello to plush, cozy sleep in the wild or your backyard. Find Big Agnes at an outdoor retailer near you or at bigagnes.com and feel the difference. Big Agnes, comfort built for the backcountry. We're back. I'm Matt Podolsky, and this is Common Land, a show about the Appalachian Trail.
My trail name is Chop Chop. It's got a multiple meaning. I was banging my sticks together, my trekking poles together, to get the leaves and debris off, and chopped them together, and there was a couple in front of me that asked if I was chopping at them, which I wasn't, but yeah, then my buddy was just like, hey, you're Chop Chop, and I liked it.
All right, so my trail name is KFC, which stands for Katie from Chicago. I always wear either a Cubs baseball cap or I have a Cubs knit cap. And a buddy of mine who lives in Atlanta was coming up to do a day hike with me. And when she finally found me, she's like, literally every person I asked identified you as Katie from Chicago. And then someone just mumbled like KFC, and a couple of thru hikers overheard it and really liked it. And so it stuck.
Okay, so my trail name is Koozy, K-O-O-Z-Y. I got it, I think it was day four, we were in Neil's Gap at the cabins there, Blood Mountain Cabins. And we all got a couple beers, and I brought out a koozie, and they're like, you have a koozie? And I'm like, yeah, no one else brought a koozie on trail. And they're like, your name's Koozie. So that's how that happened.
All right.
Okay, my trail name is Bear Snack. I try to say it so you can understand it, because it's hard, because I'm German. My sister actually called me Bärenhäppchen all the time, which loosely translates to a bear snack, because she wanted to annoy my mom, who was very worried about me and the bears. And I told this story to a couple hikers in a shelter in the Smokies, I guess. And they said, oh, that's a good trail name. And I said, yeah, it's a kind of cool trail name. And so I just kept it.
I had crossed paths with all of these hikers during earlier stages of my hike, but for some reason, when we all came together near the Vermont-New Hampshire border, something clicked.
I have wanted to do this since I was probably 10 years old. So it's been a thing on my mind kind of for like 20 years now.
I just got interested in long distance hiking, and when I started researching it, I just stumbled upon the AT.
My job before was working for the United States Navy, Merchant Marine officer.
I'm an anesthesiologist.
I work as a handyman for small business.
So my background is in supply chain and logistics, but I've kind of taken the sales route. I just got tired of the rat race that I was in and needed a break.
Confidence, it's really increased. Well, I lost 50 pounds. Your body adjusts to make your, whatever you're trying to do, as long as you keep going with it, you can do anything.
I think it's been an amazing journey from start to here, and I'm pumped to be heading into the whites. Candidly, with only a couple states left, my plan is to slow it down and savor every last minute of it and enjoy it and treat it as a vacation. And, but I got a lot of work in front of us. We all do. And it's just part of the journey is just, experiencing that change in mountains, terrain, season.
There's a camaraderie that I think is growing, amongst the folks that are still out here. And as we get closer and closer to our end goal, it intensifies a little bit. It's like this mixture of relief and sadness for a lot of folks. A number of people have told me that they're slowing down. Not just because the terrain's getting more difficult, but because they want the journey to last longer. They're not ready for it to end.
This was one of the things that my new tramily bonded over. Our desire to make the most of this last stretch of the hike and to enjoy and appreciate every moment to its fullest. But while I was reveling in the beauty of Musilaki's summit, my mom was plotting her return to the trail.
I'm meeting my mom at the end of the day. She's gonna jump back on trail with me tomorrow, which is huge. So my mom's been off trail for 3 or 4 weeks. She's been doing physical therapy, so she's jumping in at basically the most difficult section of the entire trail. So so it's gonna be a challenge, but we'll see what happens. Your triumphant return to the trail. How do you feel?
I feel great.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm tired because the up is hard, but
yeah.
I feel great. So far, the Achilles is fine.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. In fact, if anything's giving me trouble, it's my knee.
Figures.
Yeah. I'm not worried about my knee either, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But we're already halfway up, so I'm very close to the summit of Lafayette Peak, the highest one on the Franconia Ridgeline. My mom's right behind me. She's doing great on her first day back, especially considering the very difficult and strenuous terrain. It's super windy up here. Hey, welcome. Did your hat blow off?
I was afraid it was going to. So. We must be more than halfway, right?
Oh yeah, we're definitely more than halfway.
Good.
I think it's like 6.5 and we have 3.8 or something.
It's not bad. Man, I feel like it's gonna blow me right off.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I hike that trail every single week between May and actually into October.
Again, that's Nat Scrimshaw. Nat has adopted this section of trail, which means he volunteers to maintain the path along the Franconia Ridge. And it's a big responsibility because this part of the AT is hugely popular.
There are sunny weekends where there's 1,000 people crammed in a 2-mile section of the Franconia Ridge Trail. And not only does that affect your experience of the trail, but also people step off the trail on the alpine vegetation. And so it's doing a number on the environment. And so one of the first things to understand about the Franconia Ridge is that it is a very unique and regionally rare ecology. And it's also incredibly beautiful. You're above timberline, so, you know, there are these expansive views. You have a ecology that is tundra-like. It's a little bit like the Arctic tundra. And so you have these islands, these remnant ecologies. And some of the plants, there are some plants that actually are only found in the White Mountains. And of course, being a very beautiful, unique environment and having spectacular views, and being about a 3-hour drive from Montreal and Boston, and not that far from New York, you essentially have an incredible access. Millions and millions of people can drive to the trailhead and do this hike in a day. But you know that if you can keep people on the trail, then you're not going to do any more damage to the alpine zone. And so that's what we try to do. And historically, and this was the AMC introduced with the Forest Service in the 1970s, building these low walls that we call scree walls on either side of the trail. And that was the first attempt to really keep people on the trail by defining it.
In the woods, it's pretty easy to keep people on the trail. But on a beautiful open ridgeline with no trees, there can be a strong temptation to wander off the trail and explore. The problem with this is that the high elevation alpine ecosystems up on these ridgelines are really sensitive. To protect these unique alpine environments, it's important to stop people from stepping on the plants. This is the job of the scree walls, to keep people on the trail and prevent the trampling of rare alpine plants. Our crew traversed the Franconia Ridge on a sunny Saturday in August, so there was a big crowd on the mountain. And yeah, I saw quite a few people stepping off the trail and trampling the alpine plants. But without the scree walls to define the trail's boundary, it would have been a free-for-all. Despite the crowds, me, my mom, and my new tramley had a spectacular day up on the ridge.
I'm stoked.
Awesome.
This has been an incredible hike.
This has been a really good day, yeah.
Yeah.
Your experience, and I think I heard you correctly, was that, yeah, there were a lot of people up there, but you still had a good time, and it was, you know, a good experience. And there was a study that was done by a group from UVM. We were all surprised that a lot of the people who were visiting Franconia Ridge were more tolerant of seeing more people than we were as, quote, the managers. There are more people who are hiking that think it's okay to see other people. Nevertheless, at some point, we are going to reach a point where it's going to be there's so many people that you're not going to be able to keep them on the trail, and it may also be affecting people's experience, and what do we do? That's the big question.
I was part of the proposal to our New Hampshire senator, Senator Jean Shaheen, a request for over $1 million, $1.125 million over 5 years, to work on improving the sustainability of the Franconia Loop.
That's Alexander DeLucia, the director of trails for the Appalachian Mountain Club. The centerpiece of the Franconia Loop Trail is the Franconia Ridge.
Just under 9 miles, and it's like one of the most popular hikes, as you say, in the world. It's extremely challenging, and the environment that it brings you into is wild. That congressional appropriation was approved. So AMC is administering $1.125 million. We just completed year two of the five-year project. Finally, we have adequate funding over multiple years to not just spot fix problem areas, but to like start to finish redesign this trail. This is the largest scale project that's ever happened on the White Mountain National Forest.
But how will this project change the trail itself? This will vary depending on which section of trail we're talking about. Below the ridge, the trail is being widened, rock steps are being added, and some sections of the trail are being rerouted.
Quite dramatically different, honestly, than the jumbled gully of rocks and roots and things that's kind of a typical, White Mountain experience.
But the Franconia ridgeline poses a very different problem. Along the ridge,
what we need to ensure is that we don't have that spillover of like people trampling alpine veg and all that. So keeping people on the designated trail across the ridge, that's the key challenge.
But restoration may not be the best way to address this particular challenge. Although the ridgeline is the most famous section of the Franconia Loop Trail, all of the restoration work is taking place below treeline. Instead of working to restore the ridgeline trail, the AMC has stepped up their efforts to maintain the trail along the Franconia Ridge. Working alongside Nat Scrimshaw and his team of volunteers, AMC crews work to rebuild scree walls and educate hikers about the importance of staying on the trail. So while work on the Franconia Loop restoration will wrap in 2026, the work of maintaining the ridgeline trail is never-ending.
How are you feeling?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Sore everywhere. want to be at the shelter right now, and I feel fabulous.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, our last climb starts now. It's 0.9 to the top of Garfield. So, yeah, it's going to be steep.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I'm pretty sure.
For a change.
Uh-huh.
After the Franconia Ridge is Mount Garfield. My mom and I reached the bare summit where the rest of our crew was waiting. Together, we made our way down the mountain to a campsite for the night. My mom's first day back on trail was marked by incredibly steep climbs and some of the most spectacular views of the entire trip. We were right in the heart of the White Mountains. And while she crushed her first day back, the hikes were about to get harder.
Finding your own route through this field of giant, irregular, sharp boulders.
My mom's knee was bothering her a little bit.
I heard her mention something. She said it wasn't her Achilles, but that implied something was hurting.
In our next episode, my mom and I reach the highest peak in the Northeast, and I get enmeshed in some of the controversy surrounding the hut system run by the Appalachian Mountain Club.
They've used the hut system that they've developed also to help bring an income to pay for their organization. That's their strength and also their weakness.
Common Land is a production of the Wildlands Collective. This season was produced in partnership with New Hampshire Public Radio. This episode was produced by me, your host, Matt Podolsky. Music is by Blue Dot Sessions. To listen to the next episode in the series, just search for Common Land in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about the show and to see a full list of credits, go to commonlandpodcast.com.